American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with the capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day! It's Sean Kennedy reporting you from the internet for Monday, December 15th, 2008. And that's right, you're listening to Newsreel, the WOG Global Sit Rep on core political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening and distributing this program, you are too. You can follow up on all of these news stories, and you can check my facts by going to my live journal. And you can get to my live journal by going to sean_kennedy.livejournal.com. This would be a free podcast that can be heard on Rant Radio, SRN1, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, Pure Rock Radio, Non-Surveyum Radio, where all the surveyum is non, which is like nani non, which is like nani, which is like that fruit, which is kind of like spelt like the nun that feeds the birds who get killed by osprey networks. As well, we have creekradio.net that flows readily into Radio Red Mercury. And don't you ever forget, rocket balls for everyone. We got archers that are elite for the beast. If you want to know how to get in to see me, you got a second life node archers every Thursday at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard or Second Lifetime. And just remember, Leet for the Beast, 1-557-4666, and that will get you to where you need to go. Oh yeah, you know, it's a crazy world we live in. Let's get into some feedback. Hey, Sean, I got a lot of feedback. I went through, some of these people are going to be like, my God, I sent that thing into you like a year ago. I know, I don't often get the feedback. I wish I had more feedback. Please send it, we like it. Dear Sean, don't know how long it's been since you've been to Dave's. Are you kidding? My secret base is actually underneath Dave's Army Surplus. But now they carry Topps knives. They don't have the Tomahawk Tracker that you obsessed over a few years ago, but they do have a fair bit of fixed blades. I just picked up the Covert Anti-Terrorism, and I'm really impressed with the quality. Well, there's nothing like some new knife shine. They did actually have some Tom Brown Trackers down there, and I got a chance to get my hands on one. The problem with a lot of the Topps knives, I mean, they're beautiful knives, don't get me wrong, but they're not really subtle. I mean, it is not a subtle knife. You know, so I generally try to go for folders myself, and I really have become a fan of the curved blades. Like, we're talking the Karambits that Tarani brought and made really, really popular. I really enjoy those, and 511 makes a pretty interesting journeyman. Well, they've got like a couple of different models of Karambits that I really like, and I think that if I was going to go for something as small, it's practical, it's only got a 2-inch blade, but you know, if you know what you're doing with it, that's sort of the way I'm leaning these days. I've been eyeballing one of the Emerson Karambits, which is just like, oh my God, it's mega sexy, but I can't, you know, justify dropping 300 bills on a knife. You know, that's a little bit crazy for me, but anyway, you know, there it is. Hey, Sean! Two questions for you first. Where is Sim? Will ever be back on the show? No, fuck him. He's dead. Sim is doing his thing. Sim does everything else. You see, there's a whole lot of stuff that's going on with Rant Radio right now. This new year, after the 10-year, I mean, there comes a point in your career when you start thinking about things like, hey, what's it all about? You know, what is the legacy going to be? And Sim and I think we're ready to start talking about the next level. After 10 years, you're either going to, you know, make it happen, or you're not. So we've been around for a long time. I want to start putting out some more projects. I'd like to start looking at some old projects that, you know, some people thought have died and bring them back. So there'll be a lot of stuff going on, but Sim is heavily involved with that. Second, what do you think about Dr. Henry Mortenthaler getting the Order of Canada? No idea who that guy is. I'm pro-choice, and I'm fine with this. I think it's great that they honor the man who's dedicating his life to making sure women have a choice. But how do you deal with religious nuts that are attacking this man? The same way you deal with religious nuts who attack anyone, you use measured force in which to restrain them, otherwise you kill them dead. You know, seriously, it's like, there's religious nuts everywhere, okay? There's Christian fascists, Islamo-fascists, Jewish fascists, there's all kinds of nuts. So you can only do what you want to go. I guess me personally, yeah, I'm pro-choice. So whatever. I guess, you know, sounds like political gain to me, but whatever. Dear Sean, where did all the rant media stuff go? Was a faithful listener a couple years back, mainly on the Newsreel and Afternow shows. Now I can't even find your blog, Sean. Please help me find the way again. No news here in Sweden apart from the new iPred legislation discussion going on. Guess it's not been news, as apparently some European countries already implemented the law. If you aren't aware of the notion, iPred gives a country authority to music, movie publication... gives authority to music movie publication companies to demand the right to identify and track users in P2P networks. Anywho, please get back to me for more info where I can find you guys. Again, Yifot. Wow, that's really bizarre. I don't know why you wouldn't be able to find my blog. It hasn't changed. You know, sean_kennedy.livejournal.com. You know, that's the best way to find me. Hey, Sean, I was wondering if you'd ever consider putting up the iTunes feed again. Thanks, Emil. I wish I had the iTunes feed. I don't know how to get the iTunes feeds back. I think iTunes doesn't love me anymore. I'm not too sure what I need to do that. If anyone does know, they could get back to me. I would really appreciate that. Thank you muchly. Dear Sean, in episode patrolling, I remember Sean mentioning something about an economic crisis that would happen if everyone took their money out of the banks. Well, it didn't even take that much to screw up the whole financial system. Just got a lot of fearful investors to bet on a bunch of government-encouraged home loans to given to a few too many people that can't repay the money back. Then have those investors screw the people with high gas prices that we have no choice but to pay every week. Couple that with Democrats in the pocket of investment banks and Republicans in the pockets of the oil companies, and both parties promise not to do anything about the problems. The result? Billions of American people's tax dollars to buy failures of corporations' political greed. Bin Laden does not have to kill America because we are killing ourselves. Puppies, man. Seriously, puppies. You know, there's puppies. Puppies are full of love, you know, and flowers and stuff. You can't get too down on this kind of crap. You know, there's a lot of crazy shit that's going on in the world right now. So, you know, if you're making money, even if it's $8 an hour, focus on not spending your money. Save your money. Save your money. Seriously, hang on to it. Keep it in cash. Keep it liquid so that you're able to move. Got to get real survival with this kind of a thing. Don't be stupid. Dear Sean, I was looking at Himalayan imports recently, and I'm thinking about buying a 15-inch Angkola. I was wondering what your specs on your own Angkola, and what do you think the pros and cons are? Thanks, Misanthropic Gods. Well, I'll tell you. Misanthropic, if you're going to buy a Kukri right now, the Angkola is an amazing Kukri. I have an 18-inch Angkola, and it's pretty heavy. You know, I chose the 18-inch because that was the size of the ones they used in World War II, and they've shrunk them down since then. But the Kukri of legend is the 18-inch Angkola. Now, that said, it's way too big to use for anything practical whatsoever. It's much too big for you to carry around with you. What I would suggest is get a knife that you can carry, and I would probably look at the cold steel folding Kukri. I've given that as a gift recently. It's a pretty nice piece of kit, and it's portable, and you could actually take it with you without having to design some crazy ninja pack thing. You know what I'm saying here? So, although that said, if I was going to buy another Angkola blade, they used to make a Bowie knife called the Angkola Bowie, and that would be the direction I would go. Because, however, that said, you cannot buy a higher quality knife than the knives that come out of Nepal that are made by the Kamis. And that's not just Himalayan imports. Mind you, I've purchased three of their knives. They're all phenomenal, okay? Like, you cannot buy a better blade. So, it's not whether or not you should, if you're looking for a Kukri and you like the 15-inch Angkola, you will not be disappointed with that purchase, okay? But I would recommend that perhaps you spend your money on a knife that you can carry with you rather than the Angkola. Mind you, the Angkola, you're going to be helping out some people when you buy it. So, you know, your call. But did I like my Angkola? Yeah, it's the shizzle. Dear Sean, just to be said, though, the 18 is a little bit too big. The 18 is like walking around with a short sword, you know. But the 15-inch is still ridiculous. Dear Sean, I just got back from a Chanology raid in my town, handing out flyers and a cake to raise awareness about the activities of the Church of Scientology. This got me thinking about some of the thoughts you had about the project, and how you've been somewhat dismissive of the effect of it. effectiveness of it. Firstly, I'd like to say while South Park got the message out there about the beliefs of Scientology, they didn't get any of the credible activity that the church has, continues to be involved in. Yes, they got the best match of there are a bunch of kooks out there, but this is good. But going out the streets and talking to people about the history of Church of Scientology, Chanology, is helping people realize there are dangerous kooks rather than people weird but harmless alternative worldview. So yes, I think WOGS should be getting stuck in and helping to inform people of the situation. Well, see, it's a really dangerous thing to say what WOGS should be doing. You get shot doing stuff like that. Don't try to push WOGS. Okay? It's I know what you're saying here. But anyway, I also think WOGS should be getting involved as we can really help out, especially when it comes to making sure those involved don't get hurt. One of our number dropped out due to the family being concerned about possible backlash. Fair game is not something you want to have happen to you, and didn't want to worry about their loved ones could get hurt for your actions, even if there are totally legal and simply pointing out the illegality of actions of others. However, this does just happen to be a group of people who know how not to get caught, cover their tracks both physically and electric, and are well aware how to avoid the unwanted attention from an aggressor. Not everyone in an anonymous is fully up to speed on these things. A lot of those involved just making a stand for something that needs to be stopped. These are people who could really get hurt, as they don't know the full scale of tricks that can be used against them. A bit of guidance from WOGS would go a hell of a long way. If the WOGS are truly opposed to Scientology, then surely lending a hand will help us in the long run as well. We don't really... That's not the way WOGS work. And it's just some of the thoughts you'd consider. People want to know more or get stuck in, they should check out nturbulation.org or join in the fun. Yeah, I managed to get through all of that without making 9,000 references to any memes. So well done you. Sent in, big shock by Anonymous. Now, the whole WOG Anonymous thing. I think that what Anonymous is doing is important. I do. I do think it's important. I question whether or not it's... it's drawing attention to it. My number one thing is not getting my fans in any trouble. So I don't lead WOGS. WOGS practice something called tactical thinking, where they approach every issue they deal with it individually, and they apply their own difference engine to it, and then they make decisions based upon that with the choices they wish to make for who they are or what they want to do with their lives. So they, in essence, what I'm saying here is tactical thinking is a method of thinking for yourself. It cannot be, you know, manipulated. There is no method, no guru, no teacher. So it's a very interesting idea. I think that that's something that, you know, I read your mail out, and I think if WOGS want to get involved with something like that, my only caution is I don't want to encourage people to do that, because there's real danger there. And I don't want anybody getting excited and following stuff that they hear on the show and getting themselves into real trouble. WOGS are about survival. And, you know, if just by being, every time someone's a WOG, they become immune to being part of Scientology. So, I mean, we're both doing the same thing, me and Anonymous. I'm just doing it in a different way. Hey, Sean, I know you're probably asked this all the time, but do you ever have plans to do anything like cult ever again? Yes. The answer is yes. Secondly, would you ever do something like the What the Hell show again? Probably not, no, because of time. I really like the Rant Radio community and could communicate on the show, and how Cult was an organization trying to make a difference, and I personally, don't kill me, think there isn't much direct action in Rant Media currently. Hope you'll consider doing something like this. And this is from Tyrant 001. Well, you know, I gotta tell you, I think that... direct action and a lot of those kind of terms are a very scary term to be thrown around right now. Okay, Rant Media has always been an entertainment organization. We have a lot of interesting ideas. We have a lot of really good things that we can do. And we try to keep people out of jail. So when people try to get all whipped up into a frenzy, you know, that's one thing. But realistically, to do anything within Rant Media, somebody's going to need to spend some money, okay? And that's why Now, we have the subscription feature on the show, so that if you want to, you can decide that, hey, you know what, Sean yells at me for 4 hours every month, I'm going to buy him a beer. And so people, and we're encouraging people to subscribe, because once we get the subscriptions up, and they will come up. They will go up. Over time, the subscriptions will go up. It's just how quickly do you want to be part of the solution. Eventually, we will be able to start doing a lot more effective things to affect our future and the future of quote-unquote Rant Media. And I have visions of things like the empire that National Geographic has. Think of all the great things National Geographic does. And that's all based upon a subscription. So this is sort of the model. I think it's a great idea. And, there's lots of plans for the future, let me tell you. But let's get into the news. In media crackdown news, if you think it's tough being a blogger because your Google AdWords revenue hasn't been in the toilet lately, the Committee to Protect Journalists wants to remind you that internet journalists, including bloggers, can and do suffer much more around the world. According to the group's top new report, internet journalists now make up the largest single group of imprisoned journalists. One of the 125 journalists imprisoned around the world for doing their jobs, 45% of the bloggers, web-based reporters, and online editors, China continues its 10-year winning streak when it comes to tossing writers into jail, with Cuba, Burma, Eritrea, and Uzbekistan next in line. The numbers are down slightly from December 2007, but CPG notes that the arrests are hitting freelancers the hardest. Without the resources of a major media company behind them, lone bloggers and freelance writers often lack the resources to mount a vigorous defense once they are detained. The image of the solitary blogger working at home in his pajamas may be appealing, but when the knock comes on the door, they are alone and vulnerable, says CPG Executive Director Joel Simon. All must stand up for their rights, from internet companies to journalists and press freedom groups. The future of journalism is online, and we are now in a battle with the enemies of press freedom, who are using imprisonment to define the limits of public discourse. The results of angering a regime can be severe. CPG's corporate capsule summaries of the detained journalists contain story after story of lives utterly changed by publishing information or opinion that has displeased the government. In Burma, Nayfom Lat wrote a blog of his own and ran several internet cafes, but he irritated the Burmese ruling junta by publishing online caricatures of various generals. He was hauled away January 29, tossed in jail, charged with causing a public offense, and sentenced to 20 years and 6 months in jail during a closed trial. The U.S. makes a list, too, for its treatment of the journalists in Iraq. According to CPG, U.S. military authorities have jailed dozens of journalists in Iraq, some for days, others for months at a time, without charge or due process. No charges have ever been substantiated in these cases. This is the fifth straight year that America has made the list. Well, isn't that interesting news, eh? Did you know that? If you say things that are important, people will try to destroy you. So, you wonder why Rant Media has been able to stay alive for as long as we have. The reason why we have is because we are wise. If you stick up, it's important to stick up, don't get me wrong, but you have to do it the right way. That's why comedians, for example, comedians can say shit that other people would never be able to dream of, right? So you gotta find ways to get your point across, spread awareness, get the idea out there without getting yourself shot. That's a big idea. People are sensitive. People are sensitive. Not everyone wants to have a bunch of, you know, scary stuff. A lot of people wouldn't want to believe that 9/11 was an inside job. You know, if the truth was revealed to a lot of people, it would freak them out. And a lot of people don't believe that. They don't think, oh, yeah, no, they would handle it. No, they wouldn't, dude. They'd completely shatter. And I have evidence for that. And then this next story in Black Shakes News. A 2-year-old boy was orphaned in southwest Chinese city of Chengzhou when his parents drank pesticide after a nasty row. The tragedy, reported to the state media last month, bears testimony to the dark side of reform. Suicide rates are now among the highest in the world. On average, a Chinese person takes his or her own life. Okay, so let me start again. On average, a Chinese person takes his or her own life every 2 minutes. Every 2 minutes, 30 an hour, okay? 30 every hour, giving the world's most populous nation a dismal record as it prepares to celebrate 30 years of otherwise spectacular economic reform. Yeah, I don't know, you got 30 people shooting yourselves every hour. I wouldn't call that really spectacular economic reform. I would call that burning out the engine. With the reform, society has become more complicated, said Hu Datong, first psychoanalyst to practice in China. Wow. Individualism has become more pronounced, and psychological problems have become more and more serious, says Chengdu, a city in the southwest. Since reform kicked off in 1978, the Middle Kingdom has been through enormous upheavals, and so has the psyche of 1.3 billion people. Society has been uprooted as traditional family and clan structures have disintegrated, straining social relations and putting the individual under immense stress. Just one generation, China's millennia-old civilization has become one dedicated almost entirely to profit with profound consequences. In the overall rush to get rich, a culture of competition places huge pressure, not least on children, who usually have no siblings to face and almost impossible expectations from their parents to be successful. In the country where three or four generations used to live under one roof, the elderly are now abandoned. Once an almost unthinkable crime, while rural migrants go to the cities to work, leaving their children behind. We see more patients in psychiatric hospitals who are there because of the economic developments has caused old family bonds to dissolve. People are more isolated from others. Ah, so this is the dark side, eh? It is a time of unprecedented possibilities for education, leisure, and travel, and more people are allowed to climb the social ladder than ever before. But at the same time, many Chinese succumb to a frightening sense of insecurity. In the past, the Communist Party regulated everyone's lives, guaranteeing the iron rice bowl of government support from grave to grave. This is no longer the case, and many Chinese have lost their footing. With between 250,000 and 300,000 suicides a year, China accounts for about a quarter of the global total. Wow, according to medical sources. And that's just what they're talking about. It's the only country in the world where more women than men take their own lives, with female super suicides representing 58% of the total, they said. Women in the countryside are particularly at risk, often breaking under the triple burdens of working the fields, supporting the parents, and looking after their children. People have become more fragile, says Zhang Chun, head of a suicide prevention network in the eastern city of Nanjing. Since the opening up, the rapid social changes and the clash between modern and traditional values have had many people lose their mental balance, he said. Many now try to regain the balance in the rush for money. Even as China has moved to the spot of the world's fourth largest economy, filling many Chinese with pride, suicide has become the main cause of death in the age group between 15 and 34. So, the major cause of death in China between the ages of 15 and 34 is not heart disease. It is not smoking. It is not traffic. It is not... Like, the number one killer over there is you kill yourself. Dude, you know, I've kind of talked a lot about this. You put the gun to your head and you say, wait, it's not that bad. I've got this gun here. Anyway, China is also one of the rare nations where suicides are more frequent in the countryside than in the cities. There are a number of suicides that's three or four times larger than in cities, says Yang Qing, professor of psychology at the Shenzhen University in the south. The Chinese are caught in the middle of an often conflicting demands of communism, Confucianism, and capitalism. You know, that's why these people need WOGs. Okay, we gotta get some WOGs in China. That's what we gotta do. Because, I mean, dude, I'll tell you things that WOGs don't do. WOGs don't kill themselves. Alright, they don't do that. And they do not know which one to turn to, experts say. So they don't know if they want to go with communism, Confucianism, and capitalism. I don't know, if I was you, I'd probably go Taoist, and maybe Taoist with, maybe Taoist with some French Foreign Legion training. It's not like the West, where the majority have a religious faith, said Zhu Wenli, a psychologist from the southwest city of Chongqing. Well, the West, not a lot of people have religious faith. Most of the people here do not have any religion, especially not the young. Well, isn't this interesting? And if they do go to temples, many it's ordering to light incense for a pious plea for money. Now, hang on. It's kind of an interesting thing that they got this whole bit with religion being used to help you through hard times, right? They say that because you have religion, you're able to get through hard times. So, I put it to you that if it's not necessarily to make a god, or if you don't necessarily have a god, it's necessary to make one. So we all got our own gods, you know? Some of us, we all pray to different things. Some of us pray to money, some of us pray to independence, some of us are atheists. And, like, Sim's like a crazy atheist. Sim's like a Dawkins-level atheist, you know? And that's it. That's his trick. He feeds on that. That's what he uses to be, you know, the guy. Yeah, sure. Online gaming. You know, it's a good idea to have something to help you carry on. You know, that's where I'm going with this. Anyway, in stupid human news, the Seattle Times has a disturbing story describing the scene at Valley Stream, New York Walmart, where worker Jimadai Tai Damur died of asphyxiation. You may have heard about this guy. This guy was at Black Friday, and shoppers were like, they ran over him and trampled the Walmart employee, and he died. But check this out. Apparently, shoppers were apparently cracking jokes and making fun of him as paramedics struggled to save his life. Quotes here, trampled by a mob of bargain-hungry Black Friday shoppers, Jado Demetri, 34, died by asphyxiation, leaving people asking why and how. Audio-enhanced chatter capture on a cell phone posted to YouTube and interviews with witnesses offer some hints. The video shows police officers crouched by a 6-foot, 5-inch, 270-pound man lying in the entrance of the Long Island Walmart. Paramedic pumps the man's chest so forcefully his limp legs and feet joggle. Shoppers peer from behind the glass doors and stand a few feet away, hands in pockets. They need to shock him, a voice says. The paramedics stop pumping. The man's shirt has been pulled to his neck, revealing his belly. The woman in the crowd mutters, pregnant. Another cracks a joke. The women laugh. An eyewitness, whose arm was broken by the crowd, said she tried to get the police to do something, but was greeted with sarcasm. A woman pushed Jones, who said back to her, we can't move. She felt something punch her left temple. The force knocked off her glasses. Sergo fell to the ground, her right arm broken. She telephoned her mother, Therese, telling her, we were attacked. Her mother called 911 and raced to the scene with her husband, Roger Sergo, a firefighter. They got there when the police arrived. There, Sergo told an officer, can't you see the crowd is out of control? She said, he replied sarcastically, I'm surprised we haven't heard gunshots yet. Now, you see, this is wrong, okay? Like, this level of total hatred for your fellow man is pretty brutal. But that's what we're fighting against, okay? That's when every time you get a WOG, he's willing to stand up and stand back and say, whoa, this is kind of psycho. But you don't really find a lot of WOGs shopping at Walmart. But, you know, I don't know, man. I don't know. Maybe you do. WOGs have to survive, so they got to do whatever it takes to survive. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know. I don't think that that'd be, I don't think there'd be anyone we'd know would be in that crowd, that's for sure. You know, I'll go out on a limb, I'll even say that. I think WOGs are pretty good people. In conspiracy verification news. Now, this was from the Financial Times. Okay? And they're now saying that, yes, there is, that essentially Alex Jones is right. All right? This is from the article. I have never believed there's been a secret United Nations plot to take over the United States. I have never seen black helicopters hovering in the sky above Montana, but for the first time in my life, I think the formation of some sort of world government is plausible. A world government would involve much more than cooperation between nations. It would be an entity with state-like characteristics backed by a body of laws. The European Union may have already set up a continental government for 27 countries, which could be a model. The EU has a Supreme Court, a currency, thousands of pages of law, a large civil service, and the ability to deploy military force. So could the European model go global? There are reasons for thinking that it might. First, it's increasingly clear the most difficult issue facing the governments are international in nature. There's global warming, global financial crisis, and a global war on terror, all of which are not really proven to exist. Second, it could be done. Transport and communication revolutions have shrunk the world so that, as Jeffrey Blayani, an eminent Australian historian, has written, for the first time in human history, a world government of some sort is now possible. Mr. Blayani foresees an attempt to form a world government at some point in the next 2 centuries, which is an unusually long time horizon for an average newspaper column. Yeah, I'd say 2 centuries is pretty obvious, but anyway. And the third point, a change in the political atmosphere suggests that global governance could come much sooner than that. The financial crisis and climate change are pushing national governments towards global solutions. Even in countries such as China and the U.S. are traditionally fierce guardians of national sovereignty. Barack Obama, America's president in waiting, does not share the Bush administration's disdain for international agreements and treaties. In his book, The Audacity of Hope, he argues that when the world's sole superpower willingly restrains its power and abides by international agreed-upon standards of conduct, it sends a message that these rules are worth following. The importance that Mr. Obama attaches to the UN is shown by the fact he has appointed Suzanne Rice, one of his closest aides, as the American ambassador to the UN and given her a seat in the cabinet. A taste of the ideas doing the round in Obama circles is offered in the recent report by the Managed Global Insecurity Project, whose small U.S. advisory group includes John Podesta, the man heading Mr. Obama's transition team, and Strobe Talbot, the president of Brookings Institution from which Ms. Rice has emerged. The MGI report argues for the creation of a U.N. High Commissioner for Counter-Terrorist Activities, a legally binding climate change agreement negotiated under the auspices of the U.N. and creation of a 50,000-strong U.N. peacekeeping force. So we're looking for 50,000 United Nations peacekeepers, an army. Once countries has pledged troops to this reserve army, the UN would first have first call upon them. So they take all their, they make their UN army and out they go. These are the kind of ideas that get people reaching for their rifles in America's talk radio heartland. Aware of the political sensitivity of its ideas, the MGI report opts for soothing language and emphasizes the need for American leadership and uses the term responsible sovereignty when calling for international cooperation rather than the more radical-sounding phrase favored in Europe, shared sovereignty. It also talks about global governance rather than world government. Oh, global governance. Good. No, that's much better. But some European thinkers think they recognize what's going on. Jacques Attali, the advisor to President Nicolas Sarkozy in France, argues that global governance is just a euphemism for global government. As far as he's concerned, some form of global government cannot come too soon. Mr. Attali believes that at the core of the international financial crisis is that we could have global financial markets and no global rule of law. So it seems everything is in place. For the first time since Homo sapiens began to doodle on cave walls, there is an argument, an opportunity, and a means to make serious steps towards a world government. But let's not get carried away. While it seems feasible that some sort of world government might emerge in the next century, any push for global governance in the here and now would be painful and a slow process. There are good and bad reasons for this. The bad reason is the lack of will and determination on the part of the national political leaders who, while they might like to talk about the planet in peril, are ultimately still much more focused on their next election at home. But this problem also hints at a more welcome reason why making progress on global governments should still be slow sledding. Even in the EU, the heartland of law-based international government, the idea remains unpopular. The EU has suffered a series of humiliating defeats in referendums, and when plans for ever closer union have been referred to in the votes, in general, the union has progressed faster when the far-reaching deals have been agreed by technocrats and politicians, and then pushed through with a direct reference to the voters. International governance tends to be effective only when it's anti-democratic. Interesting. The world's most pressing political problems may indeed be international in nature, but the average citizen's political identity remains stubbornly local. Until somebody cracks this problem, the plan for world government may have to stay locked away in the safe at the United Nations. So, interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. Maybe that's what's going to happen. You know, maybe that's what's going to come to pass. We're all going to wind up having to deal with that. Is world government a bad idea? I don't know. I think that it's probably the best way to get us to space. You know, if we stop fighting with each other, we are one small blue planet. It does make sense to me that we all kind of try to get along. You know, if we could stop war with world government, that would be cool. Maybe stop people dying, that'd be cool too. But if we wind up with one world government like they got on the Georgia Guidestones that says that, you know, there should only be 500,000 people living in the world, I have a bit of a problem with that. In Grey Goo news, rather than infer that nanotechnology is safe, members of the public who learn about this novel science tend to become sharply polarized along cultural lines. This is interesting. According to a study conducted by the Cultural Cognition Project at Yale Law School in cooperation with the Project on Emerging Nanotechnologies, the report is published online in the Journal of Nature Nanotechnology. These findings have important implications for garnering support for new technology, say researchers. Well, I don't think that anybody's really afraid of nanotech. I just don't think that anybody wants to wind up being bucket monkeys. You know what I mean? Like when you get the transporter and you run the monkey through the transporter the first time, it's like, block, and you know, you pour the bucky into the monkey, the the monkey goes in the bucket afterwards because it's like, you know, all inside out and turned into an orange and shit. So, yeah, you know, I don't really want to be a bucket monkey. I'd like to make sure the stuff is safe before we proceed with it because we're dealing with some pretty tricky stuff here. The experiment involves a diverse sample of 1,500 Americans, the vast majority of whom were unfamiliar with nanotechnology. A relatively new science that involves the manipulation of blah, 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 blah. We already know. When shown a balanced information about the risks and benefits of nanotechnology, study participants became highly divided in, on its safety compared to a group not shown such information. The determining factor on how people responded was their cultural values, according to Dan Kahn, Elizabeth Day Collar, professors at Yale Law School, and lead author to the study. People who have more individualistic, pro-commerce values tended to infer that nanotechnology is safe, while people who are worried about economic inequality read the same information as implying that nanotechnology is likely to be dangerous. So if you worry about economic inequality, you're probably, you know, a Luddite. According to Kahan, this pattern is consistent with studies examining how people's cultural values influence their perceptions of environmental and technological risks. Generally, in sum, when they learned about new technology, people formed reactions to it that matched their views of risks like climate change and nuclear waste disposal, he said. So, you know, big shock there. A lot of people are very worried about nanotech, and they're going to make decisions based upon their value structure. I don't really think we need to have a news report to say that, you know, so what? So people are a little bit worried about nanotech. Okay, well, check it out. We got more stuff coming up about nanotech. I guess nanotech is the new buzz phrase. That's going to be the new thing that comes along. So we'll see what happens. But in more gray goo news, IT, it sounds like a plot straight out of a science fiction novel by Michael Crichton. Toiletry companies formulate new cutting-edge creams and lotions that contain tiny components designed to work more effectively. But these minuscule building blocks have unexpected drawbacks, ability to penetrate skin, swarm the body through, and overwhelm organs like the liver. Humans have long lived in dread of such nightmare scenarios where swarms of creatures attack. Alfred Hitchcock envisioned a menacing flock in The Birds. In the 1998 film Arachnophobia, a killer spider arrives in the United States where it attacks and multiplies. That's not anything to do with arachnophobia. Arachnophobia had absolutely nothing to do. Sorry, I'm just in the 1990 film Arachnophobia, a killer spider arrives in the United States where it attacks and multiplies. That's what this guy said. Arachnophobia was about a nuclear farm where, like, some toxic waste spill, like, and it spread through a town. This guy has no idea what the fuck he's talking about. Anyway, it just bugs me. So anyway, establishing that this guy hasn't checked his sources and is talking out his ass, I will now continue with the story. And now comes nanophobia. Don't you love this guy? The fear of tiny components engineered on the nanoscale that is 100 nanometers or less could run amok inside the body. A human hair, for example, is 50,000 to 100,000 nanometers in diameter. A nanoparticle of titanium dioxide in sunscreen could be as small as 15 nanometers. One nanometer equals a billionth of a meter. The smaller the particle, the further it can travel through the tissues, along airways and blood vessels, says Dr. Adrian Nasir, clinical assistant professor of dermatology at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Especially if the nanoparticles are indestructible and accumulate or are not metabolized, if you accumulate them in the organs could fail. Indeed, some doctors and scientists and consumer advocates are concerned that many industries are adopting nanotechnology ahead of studies that would establish whether or not regular ingestion and inhalation of dermal penetration of these particles constituted a health or environmental hazard. Personal care products are simply the lowest hanging fruit. So, I guess no one wants to make sure they're safe, i.e. they're not worried about the bucket monkeys. This is why it's important to be aware of this kind of stuff. But people are already exposed to nanoparticles. Stoves and toaster ovens emit ultrafine particles for 2 to 30 nanometers, according to the National Institute of Standards and Technology. Results reported last month that long-term contact with such appliances could constitute large exposure to small nanoparticles. Several products already use nano-engineered materials. These nano pants. It's almost as good as rocket balls. Not quite as good, but nano pants are like, hey man, those are nano pants. Nano pants. Yeah, it's like rocket balls for clothing. Check out my nano pants. They're like better than fancy pants. They're nano pants. They're stain-resistant chinos and jeans whose fabric contain nano-sized whiskers that repel oil and dirt and nanocycles, made from carbon nanotubes that are stronger and lighter than standard steel bicycles. And in lotions, creams use nano-components many more times more cosmetically elegant and effective, like uniformity and spreadability. Some ingredients may behave differently as nanoparticles as they do in larger forms. Nano-sized silver, for example, can act as an antibacterial agent on the skin. It's also kind of a little bit dangerous. But anyway, larger particles of zinc oxide, titanium dioxide, result in pasty sunscreen. But as nanoparticles, they appear more transparent. So this guy goes on and on and on, talking about whether or not, whether or not the nanotechnology is the way to go, la la la. It's generating buzz for, like, a buzzword is what it is. And I think it's something that we need to be aware of with the products that we use. Do you know what's actually in, you know, your shampoo? Do you know what's on the lotion, like your shaving cream or stuff that you put on your face? Do you pay attention to the food that you eat? You know what I mean? I think it's very, very important that you pay attention to the food that you eat. I think it's important, especially your food. You are your diet, okay? So if you're eating shit, you know, stop. Don't eat poop, okay? Universal law, man. Just don't eat poop. You know, drink water. Be smart about these things. We have a lot of stuff that we need to keep ourselves healthy for. We're in a really dynamic time right now. More things have been invented in the last 50 years than in the history of the world. We have to make sure that we're smart, and we have to be reading as many books as we can get our hands on so we understand and have direction within our lives. And in order to maintain any kind of quality of life, you have to have your health, and your health is directly related to your diet. So, you know, that's a big thing. So, you know, pay attention to what's in the stuff you use. In cyber war news, the U.S. faces a cybersecurity threat of such magnitude that the next president should move quickly to create a Center for Cybersecurity Operations. Okay, this is another group. And appoint a special White House advisor to oversee it. Those are among the recommendations of a 44-page report by the U.S. Commission on Cybersecurity, a version which will be made public today. The bipartisan panel includes executives, high-ranking military officials, intelligence officials, leading specialists, and computer security, the two members of Congress. To compile the report, which is entitled Securing Cyberspace in the 44th Presidency, commissioner members say they reviewed tens of thousands of pages of undisclosed documentation, visited forensic labs and the national security agencies, were briefed by closed-door sessions by top officials from the Pentagon, CIA, and the British spy agency MI5. From their research, they've concluded that the U.S. badly needs a comprehensive cybersecurity policy to replace an outdated checklist of security requirements for government agencies under the existence of the Federal Information Security Management Act. The report calls for the creation of a Center for Cybersecurity Operations that would act as a new regulator of computer security in both the public and private sector. This is very important. So that means that the private sector has to run through these guys too. These are the internet cops. Active policing of government and corporate networks would include new rules and a red team to test computers for vulnerabilities now being exploited with increasing sophistication and frequency by identifying credit card thieves, bank fraudsters, crime rings, electronic spies. We're playing a giant game of chess now, and we're losing badly, says Commissioner Member Tom Kellerman, a former World Bank security official who is now Vice President of Security Awareness at Core Security. Kellerman should know. He had a hand in crafting the nation's cybersecurity strategy in 2003. But as he tells it, the government efforts led by the Homeland Security Department have been stymied by bureaucratic confusion and unwillingness by agencies and corporations to share information about cyber break-ins. The commission's report cataloged the incidents affecting financial institutions, large corporations, and government agencies, including some first detailed publicly over the last year in various Business Week articles. In an ominous note from the private sector, the commission noted that senior representatives from the intelligence community told us they have conclusive evidence covertly obtained from foreign services that the U.S. companies have lost billions in intellectual property. For more than the spread of malicious software, read Saturday's New York Times article, Thieves Winning Online War, Maybe Even in Your Computer. Kellerman describes a behind-the-scenes effort by several members of the commission, five of whom are advisors to President-elect Barack Obama's transition team, to convince him for the need for action to stop hemorrhaging of the national secrets, proprietary information, and personal data. We need to begin to deal with this cancer. informal briefings by members of the commission starting in July have seemed to have affected Obama's thinking, sources say. Those who worry about the problem have heartened by his July 16th vow to declare our cyber infrastructure as a strategic asset and bring together government, industry, and academia to determine the best ways to guard the infrastructure that supports its own power. At the time, the candidate also pledged that if elected, he would appoint a national cyber advisor who would report directly to the president. Which, you know, which realistically to me should be that guy, Cornelius Tate, who's the director of the Homeland Security Cybersecurity Division right now. And, you know, he's actually a hell of a nice guy. If you ever get a chance to slap hand with Director Tate, he's an okay shit. You know, he did Secret Service work for like 22 years. He's a straight shooter. You know, and I don't think a lot of these guys, I mean, these guys are, you know, everybody seems to hate on the cops. Everybody, it's nice to hate on them, but you know what? I think a lot of these guys, at the end of the day, just want to do the right thing, and I don't think they're really there to screw you over. Mind you, as we get further down the chain, I've been really upset, and I should state lately that I've been really upset with some of the stories that I'm hearing about police. Like, some stories are just bad spin, you know, where the cop punches a guy who desperately deserves it, and everybody claims, you know, police brutality. You know what I mean? Like, okay, some people need to get, you know, stomped on. I hate to say it, but it's true. Okay, but some of the stuff now that has been reported, like some of the gross police misconduct and things like that, that's really upsetting. And that really bothers me. I don't like that very much at all. And I got to say that we've got to do something. We have to get some checks and balances in play here. And it seems that there's a lot of, you know, there's two schools of thought on how many guns are on the street in the United States. I think that it's okay to have guns. It's okay to be able to buy guns and stuff like that. But I don't know. In Canada, you're not allowed to have a lot of guns. So consequently, you don't have a lot of shooting. So maybe that's a good thing. I don't know. But I think that I'd like to be able to buy more guns. I wish I could live in like an Oregon or someplace like that where they got good conceal and carry laws. But check this story out here. In Los Angeles, in Guns for Food News, this is a crazy story. A program to exchange guns for gifts has brought a record number of weapons this year as residents hit hard by the economy to look under their bed and in closets to find items to trade for groceries. Now, hang on. If I have a family, I'm not going to give up my guns. The annual Gifts for Guns program wound down Sunday in Compton, a working-class city in Los Angeles, has long struggled with guns and gang violence. In a program similar to the ones in New York and San Francisco, Los Angeles Sheriff's Department allows residents to anonymously relinquish firearms in return for $100 gift cards at Ralph's supermarkets, Target department stores, Best Buy electronics stores. Turning in assault rifles yields double the amount. In past years, Target and Best Buy were the cards of choice, with residents wanting presents for the holidays. This year, most asked for supermarket cards. Wow, people just don't have the money to buy food these days. Sorry, people just don't have the money to buy food these days. Deputies expected to collect about 1,000 weapons this year. Authorities say 590 guns and 2 hand grenades were handed in during the last weekend in November, more than total collected any year, eclipsing last year's 387 guns. Most said most of the residents who turned in the weapons were family people, which kind of makes me go, great, so now only the criminals have guns. That makes me feel so much better. And in American crackdown news, Justice David A. Souter questioned an Arizona lawyer Tuesday about when and where police officers may search dangerous-looking individuals. Now, this is important. This is why I'm a big fan of, like, the 5'11 stuff. Stuff that's designed to make you blend in, okay? The issue in the case was whether officers may pat down passengers in traffic stops as there is evidence they are involved in criminal activity. Justin appeared ready to accept that search may be conducted if there is a reasonable suspicion the passenger is armed and dangerous, the Associated Press reports. But Justice David A. Spouster pressed further, according to Law.com, he asked the Arizona Assistant Attorney General Joseph Parkhurst whether an officer could pat down anyone on the street who, quote-unquote, looks like trouble. Parkhurst said yes, as long as the officer has an articulable, reasonable suspicion that a person is in immediate danger. Souter then posed the hypothetical question, the individual The individual gives him mean looks, and he has a bulge of something on his hip. Parker responded that a pat-down could very well be warranted, the Law.com story says. Souter later said he was worried about the state's position, would support just about any pat-down. You know, Benjamin Franklin's remark, it's great to be a reasonable person because you can think of a reason for anything you do, Souter said. Interesting. Today's daily hack is Grease Monkey. Grease Monkey is a powerful Firefox extension that allows users to change the layout and functionality of web pages. Every month, hundreds of people write and release Grease Monkey scripts that anyone can add to their browser with a single click. A good Grease Monkey script will change your daily use of the web in ways you can't imagine being without. And it goes on in the article and talks about it. Very, very cool. Check it out. It is Grease Monkey. And that's all I got for you today. But don't worry, I'll be back next week to make sure you get the news you need to survive. This has been a free podcast brought to you by the Wogs Who Care. If you cannot donate to the program, please distribute this program. Get this program out to people who need to hear it. And if you can donate, please do so by clicking on the by going to my live journal on the left-hand side of the page. You'll find there's where you can download the site. There's a little link there that says subscribe, and I really do encourage you to subscribe rather than giving me $20 or whatever. Honestly, if you listen to the show every week, hey, is it worth $5 to you? Come on, you probably give $5 out to the guy begging on the street corner. He hasn't done shit for you other than make you feel guilty. And I'm giving you 4 full hours of entertainment. If it's worth a beer to you once a month, hey, please subscribe. It helps out more than you can imagine, and it helps with their plans for the orbiting space platform. If you want to get in touch with us, you can send a snail mail envelope to Box 18121, 12150C, 56th Street, Delta, BC, Canada, V4M, 2M4. And I want to thank the Army of the Flying Monkeys for their assistance in gathering data. If you have information that you would like to send me, you can reach me at newsreel@ranradio.com. If you like the music in the background, please check out the Psytrance. And I'm going to fade out now with a track from my own personal collection. Remember, everyone, we will never defeat the enemy if we're at each other's throats. So until next time, that's what Server said. End of line.
I would die for peanut butter. Oh, yeah. Yeah.